Hello and welcome to the award-winning Canine Hooper's World podcast. Everyone's invited. Hello everybody and welcome to season 3 episode 40 of Canine Hooper's World the podcast. Today I have she is a Canine Hooper's World instructor, she's an IMDT trainer, and we've known each other for a little bit now. But I would like to introduce you to the fabulous Natalie. Nat, how are you, darling?
I'm good, thank you. I'm very cold. It's very cold at the moment, isn't it?
Mate, it's freaking Baltic. Although I guarantee when this podcast comes out, the British weather will have done something weird again. It'll probably be like 20 degrees and everyone will be moaning that there was no snow at Christmas. So
very true.
Although, because you're up in the north, aren't you? Have you actually had proper snow?
We've had drabs. We haven't had like proper snow yet, have you?
Whereas like for southerners, we had like actual snow that stopped people driving and stuff, which was like all of 3 inches.
Oh God.
But
oh dear.
Yeah, no, we've had some southern snow. It was cool. We got some nice snow pictures and all that stuff. So yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
So Nat, people that don't know you, who are you? What do you do?
So I am, as you just said, Canine Hooper's World Instructor, taught by the best. And I have a business in the Northeast called Tees Valley Dog Training. I specialise in puppies, because who doesn't love puppies? And hopefully over the next year, going to be doing a lot more dog sports. So I want to kind of specialise in like hoopers, man trailing, and some scent classes as well.
Nice. So yes, puppies are very cute. Now if you haven't listened to the episode before this, guys, Mr. Greg was filling us with the woes of, oh my god, I got a puppy, and then it turned into an adolescent arsehole, and I just laughed smugly on the podcast at him because, well, y'all know what Dodge has been like. So now what would your kind of advice be if someone's like got the puppy over Christmas because, you know, they're going to be at home, they've got more time to spend with the puppy. We're not saying that you should give puppies as Christmas presents to people, but some people do get puppies around Christmas. And I don't think it's the worst time of year to get one because most people are generally home more.
Yeah, I just think with, regardless of, well, you've got the Christmas tree to contend with for a start, haven't you? Which is going to be very exciting for any puppy. But every single new puppy owner, I think you just need to take things slow. Don't rush anything. Let them experience the world at their own pace. Just chill out, especially kids. If you've got kids in the home as well, you know, take some time out so the puppy has time by itself, so the kids mm-hmm. can have time out away from puppy. Just chill. It's usually pretty chill around Christmas anyway, isn't it? And
I mean, generally, you know, I don't know about your house, but we've eaten way too much food and just end up sitting on the sofa going, oh. And then you're like, oh, actually, I could probably fit a mince pie in. And then you instantly regret your life choices, but then there's Quality Street. And then you regret your life choices a little bit more. But then, you know, there might be some after eights, which, you know, just finish it all off nicely. So,
oh, yeah. There's way too much food around, isn't there?
Yeah. But all of those things, you know, mince pies, chocolates, all that, do make sure you are keeping away from your puppy, health and safety risks, and that stuff. So, kind of puppies and dog sports, they do go together a little bit, but they're kind of very different avenues in the dog world. What's made you decide on those kind of being the things?
I think it's just my area. Like, if there's some very good dog trainers in my area, and it's kind of nice that every dog trainer's got a bit of a niche. So like Greg, who you were just talking about then, he does a lot of reactivity work. There's just really good dog trainers in the area. No one was really specializing in advertising in puppies. And after doing a few courses on puppies, I just really love, who doesn't love being around them, to be fair? And then the dog sports thing came from you. So I've just absolutely love teaching hoopers at the moment. I've got such a lovely client base. So many people are like really into it in the area. Some really good venues that I teach at. So I just really want to build on that. And then obviously I can encourage all these little puppies when they're old enough to come and join in all the wonderful dog sports as well. So it's good for, obviously in the UK, I used to live in Australia, which we'll get onto in a bit. Dogs were just more or less free roaming out there. You know, they would live outside, live in the gardens. They weren't confined to houses, confined to crates. They just had so much more freedom out there. So we didn't have the reactivity problems that we have with a lot of dogs in the UK. Mm-hmm. I find dog sports amazing. Like when you see a dog man trailing, a reactive dog man trailing, they're so focused. They've got a job to do. You know, it's amazing to watch these dogs work, and it's so rewarding as well. So I just really can't wait to get stuck in next year with more sports.
Yay. And you know, I'm a fan of, well, I personally with Dodge, I prefer tracking. But
yeah,
sometimes his tracks do turn into trails. I have to say, we do not do the very strict type of tracking. But that's kind of our little weekly game. Shout out to my lovely friend Tash, who lays my tracks for me so that Dodge can go and find her and do something a little bit different from Hooper's. Because I think it's good for them to kind of do different things. So being able to offer your client base like Hooper's, but also the scent work and then the man trailing as well, I think it's a really nice basis. But also, as you mentioned, it's lots of things that people can do with the yellow dogs, the dogs that need a bit more space, the dogs that have big emotions, you know, because Hooper's is a great outlet for the dogs. Obviously, man trailing gives a lot of dogs a really good job, and so does scent work. And the thing with all of those kind of activities is that they are literally suitable for all breeds, aren't they?
Yeah. And we went last week, I tried my hand at Kennycross. So as you know, I've got like a little whippet, beautiful little whippet.
Well, hang on, you took the whippet out in the cold. What's wrong with you?
She had two layers on.
Oh, okay. That's okay. We're just gonna full disclosure. You did not run naked whippet in the cold. I'm just making sure.
No, she was fine. But she like struggles quite a lot on firework night, any loud noises, stuff like that. But right from the offset, she, because there was other dogs around and she was like in this little community of dogs, she must have thought, I've got a job to do now. And from the get-go, I was running with a friend who had her dog, and she was just amazing. She like pulled me around this 5K route, and halfway round, when we got round, there were bird scarers in the next field. And I was like, oh my God, my heart was going for it. But you know what? She had a job to do, and she totally ignored these bangs from the bird scarers, and she just kept going. Whereas if we were on a walk, she would have done a little, she does a little middle, gets between my legs and say, help me, I'm panicking a bit. But she was just, oh, it's all right, I'm working, I've got a job to do, let's keep going. And it was just amazing to see. Yeah.
That's very interesting. I wonder if it's because maybe like she already had a little bit of adrenaline going, and therefore her system was like, right, we're doing this thing and we're running, and I can't be dealing with that right now because we've got the thing to do, and all the other dogs are running. And I guess as well, if the other dogs were kind of chill and just carrying on, she was like, oh, okay.
They're not bothered.
Yeah. No, that's cool. So will you be doing any more Canicross in the future?
I think, yeah, we weren't doing strict Canicross, like we don't have all the gear and everything. But if she was like, she seemed to have a really good time. Obviously, I've got to work on her fitness a little bit. We can't just go,
I'm
out
not
going
to
like,
lie, I'm well impressed you went straight out and did like a 5K, because that's not like a short distance, just saying.
No, well, for, yeah, I run quite a bit, but for her, I think it was quite a lot.
It's me, she's like 5k, are you mad? Like, no, like honestly, the times have changed from Shape Timber, where I actually did running for a month. Now I'm like, no, it's nothing.
Yeah, she obviously with her breed, she just likes little short sharp bursts, and then she's kind of done for the day. So for her to do 5k, I think that was quite a lot for her in minus 2 degree heat in the cold. But she absolutely loved it, and she she really enjoyed it. But yeah, it was a lot for her. So we might try build it up a little bit.
Well, that's cool. And you had fun. And she had fun, and yay, good job.
Yeah.
So let's kind of go back a little bit in your journey, because you've kind of like, you've hinted towards Australia, but I want to kind of go into what happened before you moved kind of out to Australia, because there was a whole life pre-Australia, wasn't there?
Pre-Australia there was, yeah. I was, when I was 16, I was getting ready to leave school, and my sister was at sixth form college, and she's smart, my sister's very, very clever, but she used to come home from sixth form college crying, saying, I can't do it, Dad, like, I don't want to do it. So I said to Dad, well, if she can't do it, I'm not doing it. So then Dad was like, right, well, you're getting a job. Oh, okay. Obviously, but it had to be like, I think back then you had to get an apprenticeship, didn't you? So I think on the, and my dad was in the military for 28 years. So I think just after my GCSEs in the June, I popped down to the Army Careers Office, and by the September, I was at basic training. I always said to my dad, I'd love to be like a dog handler in the police. I think that would be amazing. And he literally, he's going to kill me for mentioning this. He said, no, animals are just a phase. I was like, okay. Yeah, he was in the signals. So I ended up doing 6 years in the signals. And then
Hang on, hang on, stop. Explain to us civvies what that means, please.
oh, so just like working with telecommunications, so
Okay.
fixing fiber optic cable lines and telephone lines and stuff like that. Like if you asked me to do it today, I wouldn't have a clue what I was doing. And I very quickly realized I wasn't very technically minded as well. So yeah, 6 years, and then I was done. And then yeah, there was a group of us that were kind of getting out together. So we said, why don't we go on holiday for a year? So we did, and we went to Australia. And it turned into 12 years.
What? Oh my God, let's go on holiday for a year, 12 years
Yeah.
later. Like, I feel that became like
Yeah.
more than just a holiday. So I'm assuming the first year out there was kind of traveling and seeing stuff
Yeah.
and that sounds cool.
The first 2 years were traveling, doing stuff, and then I got an opportunity to get my residency, which was amazing. So I could actually stay, and then a few years later, I got 2010, I think it was, I got my citizenship, which was good. So I could have really got a passport and everything, could have stayed, but yeah, came back in 2016, just family, homesick, as you do.
I mean, I feel that like 2020, maybe you should have just have snuck back in quickly before all hell broke loose. Just
Yeah,
gonna say.
it could have been a good idea, yeah, but yeah, it
I
was
feel you
just
missed the
I'm
trick there, Nat.
yeah maybe, but yeah, pretty varied life. It's been very grateful for the life I've had so far.
So, where in Australia did you end up settling?
In Cairns, which is like far north Queensland, this very big touristy place up there. I was so far, if you look at a map, it's the top left
Right,
of
okay.
Australia. Yeah,
Thank
so a
you.
lot of tourists and backpackers and stuff end up doing, like, they'll go and do like Sydney to Cairns, so they'll travel all up the east coast, which is
Okay.
lovely. Very touristy, very commercial, very nice. So yeah, spent a lot of time there, but traveled all over, had some amazing opportunities, and had my own little pet care business for a little while out there. Worked in kennels, sold socks, worked on a cattle station,
I
worked
love
in
that. I sold
a
socks. Like, I worked at kennels, I did pet care, I sold socks. Like, what?
was just the randomest job, but
I
so
mean,
like
that
worked
is
in
pretty
bars, just
random, is it? What is your job? I'm a sock salesman,
sock seller.
sales
Well,
lady.
I was just in a backpackers one night, and they had like a tannoy system, and I was literally down to my last pennies. Sense over there, and a voice came over the tannoy saying, if there's anyone who wants a job starting tomorrow selling socks in the local market, get to reception now. And I was like, me, I just legged it, and yeah, next morning I was selling socks. So it was just a bit random. The whole 12 years was a bit random.
Do you know what though? I love it. So apart from selling socks,
Socks.
working at kennels, what was working at kennels like over there?
Very, very different to over here. In regards to, like, obviously me and you are quite positive reinforcement based, force free and stuff, but
Mm-hmm.
back there I didn't have any experience in dog training. So like all the dogs were taken out on choke chains and slip leads when they took out for a walk, because they saw it as a safety element over there in case there was like wallabies passing by and stuff like that.
I mean, I've heard these wallabies
So
have very hard, like, you have to be careful with these wallabies, so.
oh yes, you do, very much. I've had an accident, I've had a run-in with a wallaby before, but yeah, it was just different. It was very different. Like all the kennels were outside because obviously the weather, the way that they mixed the dogs together, like working at kennels in the UK when I came back, it was just it just didn't seem as structured looking back on it now. When I was there, I loved it and I never had a second thought about it. But looking back at it now, it's still very, very different to what, like, I worked for a very big charity over here, well-known charity over here when I got back, and it was just so very structured back here. Whereas
I guess as well, though, because, like, with rescue kennels, it's much different to, say, like, a pet boarding facility because of how dogs are going to be kind of in situations. But also when you're in rescue, you get dogs that are, you know, brought in because either they're straying or they've been relinquished and all that kind of stuff. Whereas when you're in kind of pet kennels, like, people are coming back most of the time, 99% of the time, the people come back to get the dog. So,
yeah, it's very different. Yeah, it's very different. So,
so where you were kind of with you, I'm just going to touch back on what you were saying earlier, how, like, the dog's kind of lifestyle was quite different to how we were here. Do you mean, I'm assuming, like, in the towns, like, the dogs are in, like, gardens or yards and stuff, but I guess when you're in more, like, the territories, then the dogs are a bit more, not feral, but maybe a bit more free roaming.
Yeah, but even with that, when, you know, where I lived in Cairns, we would just, like, dog theft wasn't big over there. Like, people just didn't steal dogs over there. Like, so I would go to work and my dog would just stay in the garden. The weather was nice, you know, it was a secure garden, there wasn't any issues, and she had a nice bed there, and it just, that's normal over there. So you wouldn't dream of it over here, would you? Oh, I'm just going to work, so I'll just leave my dog in the garden. But then in regards to on in the bush and on the, like, I worked on a cattle station for a year, and there were dogs everywhere. Like, everybody loves their dogs out there. And it was this, like, my dog, I had an Australian cattle dog cross, and she would, you know, sit in the front of the truck with us every day as we went to work. And then she'd mingle with all the other dogs. There were never really any dog fights, anything like that. They were just, you know, like Steve Mann's story about all the dogs in Peru.
Yeah.
You know, it was just, it was, it resonates a lot with that. Like, they're just so, they're just like,
there was a bit more of a village dog vibe rather than a, like, pet, like, they were just kind of hanging around with each other. Because the thing is, like, especially when they're working as well and they're going to be on their feet all day, and even if they're not necessarily doing a formal job, they are still working because they're keeping you guys safe. Like, if there's random animals show up, like, they're going to help chase them away. They're going to alert you if there's a crocodile nearby or something, or evil little bush pigs. Got to watch out for the drop bears, because obviously drop bears
come
at any moment. So how do you kind of, like, I mean, how would you explain it to someone, like, what kind of a dog's world is like being out on that station? We'll talk about what your life was like in a minute, but what's the kind of dog's day like when you're on a cattle station?
Yeah, it depends. Who, like, we had this beautiful blue heeler out there called Blue. He belonged to the manager of the cattle station, Scotty. He was amazing. Like, I've never seen a dog work and actually do the job that they're bred for like I've seen this dog work. He was amazing. So he would be in the cattle yards with us, obviously, because we had to, at the end of the day, all the cattle would come in and we'd have to sort them into different like sections, and they'd go down the chutes and stuff. And if they weren't moving, Blue would just be on their heels constantly trying to get them to move along. And it was just it was just amazing. Like, it was beautiful to see. But on the flip side of that, if you were walking away from that cookhouse at night and going towards your bed, you had to have eyes in the back of your head, because sometimes you couldn't differentiate between cow and human. And there were quite a few people who got the nip on the back of your ankle, and it hurt as well. So
it sounds like you were on a receiving end of one.
I wasn't, but I did see a couple of people get on the receiving end of one, and it was quite funny. But yeah, it depends, like, depends what job they did. Like, my dog was out all day with me, and she thought that it was her priority to chase wallabies all day. That was her one job, and that was the only job she had to do. She never caught one, but that was, like, that was just what she would do. We would go out fixing fences all day, and she would just be, she could be, like, you know, 500, 600 meters away from us. She'd always come back. She knew, she just kind of got into routine. She was like, right, I'm off for a little bit, but I'll be back in a bit. And you could just beep the horn or something, she'd come back. And just so much freedom for them over there. It was amazing.
Amazing. So wallabies are like little teeny tiny kangaroos, right?
Yeah. So
Come on,
we
tell
were
us the story. You
driving.
dropped an Easter egg. Now you need to tell the story.
So we were driving, me and Baz, who I used to work with on the cattle station. He was a lovely guy, like a bit of a father figure while I was out there. We had been out all day fencing, so fixing up all the fences ready for mustering season. So I was driving the
Whoa,
ute.
hang on. What did that word mean?
What? A
Mustering
ute.
season?
Oh, muster it, like when you get on your little ATVs on your little quad bikes and there's the helicopter going above and you're on your quad bike, like kind of bringing all the cattle together, putting them in the
Okay, cool. So
yards
like a
and moving them
roundup type
across.
thing. Okay.
Round, that's it, there we go. But obviously
Thank
all the
you.
fences needed to be fixed, but we did that. So we were driving back one day. So it's barbed wire fences, a lot of it. So if you came back with scratches on you or whatever, it was like, oh, you've been fencing, it's fine. So we were driving. So Baz was in the passenger seat. Tilly, my old dog, she was in the middle and I was driving. And you know when you see things in slow motion and you think, oh my God, that wallaby's going to come and hit the car. So I could see it bouncing off the verge in front of us. And I was like, as we got closer, I thought, oh my God, it's actually going to come hit the window. And then I was like, oh my God, the window's open. And it was just an absolute fluke time. And this wallaby came straight through the window, landed on top of me. Tilly ended up in the footwell in the passenger seat. Baz, I don't know, he just didn't even know what happened. It happened so quick. But I managed to kind of like push it out of the window again. But I've got this god-awful scar down the back of my arm. And I'm not kidding, it's probably like about 3 or 4 inches long, of where it just ripped through all of my clothes that I had on. Well, actually, I say all of my clothes, it was quite a hot day, and had just like scarred me down my shoulder. And if Baz wasn't there with me, nobody that day, everyone would have just been, oh yeah, whatever, you've got caught on the barbed wire fence. But it was only because he was with me, they were like, no, a wallaby came through the window.
So everyone would have just have thought you'd been a numpty and kind of misjudged it and stood up and caught yourself. Because I've caught myself on barbed wire fencing before, like being at farms and stuff. Like sometimes you just get a little prick or whatever. I've never like sliced myself, thankfully, but I can imagine how they would. It's like, yeah, I caught the biggest fish. You're like, yeah, no, this isn't barbed wire. It was a wallaby. I mean, I kind of feel though that if you were going to make up a tale like that, I don't feel a wallaby's like the hardest animal for you to have kind of done battle with.
I know. I'm just glad it wasn't one of them big, actually, one of those big red kangaroos probably wouldn't have fit through the window. So I'm just glad it was like a tiny little wallaby instead.
No, but
Because
those
they're not
kangaroos
actually
are
incapacitated.
actually freaking huge, right?
Yeah, they are massive. They are the kangaroos are huge. So there's
They're
no
just,
way I'd want to be on the
yeah.
bad side of one of them.
Because, when I was in Perth, visiting my lovely brother and teaching out there a few years ago, we went to like this. I don't know how to describe it. I don't want to call it a safari park because I don't think it was, and it wasn't really a zoo. And I know that health and safety risk assessment, it would not be legal in the UK, put it this way. But like the only animal that you basically weren't allowed to go in with was the dingo, like everything else, and the emus, like they were on the other side of fences. But like we literally walked around, like you could feed kangaroos popcorn.
Oh wow. Yeah, I think
Like,
in a lot of the parks they're used to it, I think, but not I would not go near one in the wild,
well,
like
like
the
these
wild
guys were
wild.
obviously like proper chill, very well fed, and we used to just random tourists going up and being like, here, have some popcorn. And like,
Star. Oh, nice.
but yeah, no, you don't realize how big they are until you're kind of near them, and then you're like, oh wow, you're quite large. And I don't think there were any really big red kangaroos where we were. They were all kind of like my height and smaller, so there were no like
Big ones.
ginormous ones. But I do feel like you have just kind of cemented the fact to me that when you're in Australia, most things just try and kill you though.
I think on that, even not even just the wildlife, just the lifestyle out there. Like when I was working on that cattle station, I think I nearly killed myself twice on an ATV, like on the motorbike things, once
Yeah.
going up a hill too much, too far, and it nearly flipped on me. It was only because I had a roll of barbed wire on the back that it didn't. And another time trying to load an ATV onto like a massive trailer at the end of the day. and I was riding one of the other guys' ATVs. So the what's it called? The little revy bit, the
accelerator.
Yeah, that's it. The accelerator was different because he had a bad thumb and I wasn't used to it. And I nearly went straight over the other side and actually went into the side of the owner's Hilux, brand new Hilux, and put a big dent in the side of it.
Now, I'm not going to lie, like, did they all just take the piss?
Yeah. He was a bit angry, but once he realised it was me, because I think I was the only girl that was mustering at that time, I kind of got away with it a little bit. But yeah, the wildlife is just ridiculous. The things, you know, there's the crocodiles, spiders, and all sorts out there that could pretty much do a lot of damage.
Would you go back and do it all again?
I think I'd do the cattle station again, definitely. I'd go out and do that for a year. Like, it was just so much fun, and it's like a different world out there.
Yeah.
It's just the things that you see and things that you do, which are normal to people who live on cattle stations. But, you know, when I was speaking to my sister about some of the stuff I was doing over there, she was like, "You did what?" I was like, "Well, you know, it's the way they live.
Mm-hmm.
What they do." So,
but the thing is, as well, I'm assuming that obviously the cattle is for food, but also, like, you're going to be having bush meat. Like, sorry, if anyone like has if anyone is vegan or doesn't like hunting or anything like that, you might want to skip forward about 2 minutes now. This is your chance to skip. You can skip forwards 2 minutes. Hit that little skip button. Okay, cool. Right, so have you eaten crocodile?
Yes.
Does it taste like fishy chicken?
Yes.
Because that's what alligator tastes like. So I'm assuming alligator and crocodile taste pretty similar. Have you eaten kangaroo?
Yes. Do you want to know the worst thing I've eaten?
If you the say something's unusual. Testicle.
Okay, we won't talk about it.
No, go on, go on.
Bull's balls.
How did I know you were going to say something about a testicle? I just had this feeling. It was like, I'm not going to lie, in my brain, I was going through bush tucker trials and was like, right, what disgusting rank thing has she eaten?
But we cooked them. We cooked them. So they weren't raw.
Oh, amazing. That makes it so much better. Says the vegetarian. Do you know what? But this is the thing. So, like, with, obviously, because, like, you will have eaten kangaroo and stuff. And also, like, they have wild pig out there, don't they, that cause mess, stress, destruction and chaos. So I'm assuming that if you come across them, you dispatch, and then rather than it being wasted, it's used.
Yeah. What was it? Oh, the dogs. Dog food on the station. They would eat, like, kangaroo leg or a pig, or, you know, that's, you know, no, then you don't have to pay for dog food while you're out there.
I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah. But the thing is, though, I think when
You're in a situation like that, like, as you say, there are carnivores on camp, there are canines that need meat.
Yeah.
So if you're trying to preserve the land and obviously make things safe for the cattle, and things are culled that maybe the people don't necessarily want to eat or don't need to eat, then it makes sense that the dogs eat it.
Yeah, very much sense. And a lot of the, like, the pigs, unfortunately, like some of the kangaroos, and well, all the kangaroos, they were classed as vermin because they're trying to, obviously, the cow station are trying to produce cows and meat products, and, you know, they don't want the pigs and the kangaroos around. So that was, it's just a way of life. And if, you know, if you say to people over here, oh, you know, they just killed the kangaroos over there, some people might just get a bit upset about it, but it's a way of life.
But I think the other thing is, as well, is that when, like, you think of Australia, the first animal that comes into most people's heads is kangaroo. But straight away, then maybe a drop bear, koala, if no one understands what I'm talking about, because my brother caught me out on that one. So now they're forever known as drop bears forevermore. And then wombats and like wallabies, and then obviously then you get with the snakes and the spiders and the crocs and everything else that wants to kill you. So
yeah. So yeah.
Happy days. So then from Australia, so we'll start forwarding here. So you came back to the UK 2016. When did your dog training journey kind of start?
Loosely, probably when I worked for a big dog charity, well-known UK dog charity. I used to work on the foster care side of things, but I used to work closely with the dog trainers because obviously I would get the dogs that were a bit nervous, the elderly dogs, the ones that just weren't going to cope in kennels, and put them into foster homes.
Mm-hmm.
So I used to liaise a lot with the wonderful dog training team that were there. And then I left that job in 2019, and I thought, you know what, I'll just right at the beginning of COVID.
Because why not? You know,
why not? Best thing to do. So I thought I'd start a little dog walking business. And then just through contacts, friends and people that I've known back at the charity and stuff, got some opportunities to shadow some dog training. And then in October last year, you were there, weren't you? I went for my IMDT assessment.
I love that. You were there. Yes, I think I was, yes, actually. I didn't assess you, did you? I? Didn't. But I was at the assessment.
I think
the creature was there, wasn't he?
He was there, yeah. He was there. Creature was there.
Everyone was giving him lots of space and it was great.
Yeah. So yeah, got my results this time last year, and it's just been just kind of taken off since then, especially the hooker side to it.
Mm-hmm.
Really good.
And I find with quite a lot of the and obviously a lot of the trainers I know do teach hoopers, but it's amazing how much traction hoopers is now getting. Training friends that I speak to are I started off with a couple of maybe one hoopers class a week, and now they've got multiple hoopers classes and one-to-ones all in one week.
Yeah, I find my group classes is quite quiet, but they feed into one-to-ones. So people come to a couple of group classes and they're like, you know what, we want more. So then they book on to one-to-ones. And I think I started this time last year teaching maybe three one-to-ones a month, and January I'm booked for 11.
Amazing.
So it's become really, and it's such a nice community of people as well. It's not just I'm going to hoopers. I've started a little Facebook group with everyone that does it, and everyone's real chatty and most of them know each other. It does become more than just a dog sport. It becomes a little community, which is just, it's so nice. And even the first girl that I ever started training, I'll name drop her name's Maria. She's got a lovely golden retriever called Miko. She'd only been training with me for about 3 months, and then she all of a sudden sent through this, she's like, oh, look what I've done, and she sent through a Canine Hoopers World instructor certificate. So she was enjoyed it that much that she even became an instructor.
Yeah, no, I was I know who you're talking about. See, we're spreading the Hooper spark around the world. So in terms of because obviously the dog training world is still relatively fresh to you, how are you finding it? Because I feel I'm a little bit wiser into the world, and I'm maybe a bit cynical. I've been doing this a little while now, but I feel that sometimes new instructors worry imposter syndrome. Let's just unpick this a little minute, because dog training confession, I still get imposter syndrome all the time.
I do, yeah.
Because
definitely.
Because I want to do well, because I care, because I want to make sure that I'm doing the best I can and all of that stuff. But actually, I think we kind of end up talking ourselves out of our own abilities as dog trainers sometimes. I think we're quite harsh on ourselves, and we don't need to be. And we know a lot more than we give ourselves credit for a lot of the time.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I struggle a lot with it as well, because I think as well, there's a few dog, like I said before, there's a few dog trainers in our area that I look up to. They're all IMDT ones, but I look up to them. And, you know, sometimes I do have to reach out and get help because I'm just like, you know what? I just, it's that. And it's also that thought of like, I've got this one-to-one. Am I going to say the wrong thing? Like, am I going to do the wrong thing? Last month, I had my first ever deaf dog that I've ever dealt with. And, you know, I was panicking going, like, I did my research and, like, I spoke to a couple of other trainers and stuff. And, you know, by the end of it, the owners were really, really grateful. But I think, like you say, you care, you want to do your best. And sometimes it means that you've got to, you know, you constantly got to keep up to date with all the methods and you've got to keep doing your CPD. And it is, you know, you're not just, there's always something to learn, always something new to learn. And I think you just want to be the best person that you can be and be able to help, you know, as many people as you can. But there's always going to be a bit of doubt. You're always going to have doubt.
But I think, though, when you're like, if you refer on, I applaud that fully. You know, when I was teaching sort of one-to-ones and doing things, I'd get inquiries. And if it was something outside my wheelhouse, like separation anxiety is prime example, okay, don't touch with a barge pole, I would just refer it. Because now, especially, you have trainers that have their niches, as we said. You know, Greg deals with reactivity. There are people that specialize in separation anxiety, people that specialize in resource guarding. Yourself, you're specializing in puppies. You know, it makes sense that you go to the person that's going to have the most knowledge about that part of dog training, because there's so many different branches to the tree. You can't know every single branch inside out. It makes much more sense for you to go, right, this is my branch, and I know what we're doing. But also, I actually love that you're in an area where you have a network of trainers that you can help each other out and pass on to each other, because I think that's the way we keep dog training moving forwards.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's like for me, like, I was always kind of, you do sometimes feel a little bit like, oh, you know, maybe I shouldn't have passed that on. Maybe it would have been all right. But you've got to go with your gut, I think, as a trainer. And if your gut says, oh, I don't know about this, one of the best ways, I think, and this is for any kind of pet professional out there, if you're still learning and you need to pass on to another trainer, I remember doing this with Steve himself many, many years ago. Really good friend of mine, was having serious problems with her dog, asked me for help. And I was like, look, this is about, like, this is out of my wheelhouse. I'm going to refer you to Sir. And Sir said to me, do you want to come on the one-to-one as well? Like, come and sit in so that you can learn what we're doing and what's being said, because then you can help, like, after, you know, you can be there for the aftercare and the support system, but I'll get the basis in place. And I think being able to do that really, really helps, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I remember when I was going for my IMDT assessment, like everyone panics, don't they? Like, gets nervous about it. I had a local dog trainer, lovely trainer, who said, you know what, let's go out for dinner. I'll go through everything with you. This is, you know, this is what's going to happen. This is what to expect, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, okay, yep, good. Went, absolutely smashed it, like, did really well. And then this year, a local dog trainer said to me, can you help me? Can you help me with my IMDT assessment? And I was like, I'm that person now. Like, I'm the one that can help someone else. Like,
you've gone up in the little order.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it was really nice that, like, she asked me and said, can you help me? And so, yeah, it was nice to feel like.
I mean, it feels mad to me, you know, because you said that, like, that I can still tell you, right? I can still remember my assessment. I can still remember who did my questions. Who did my rescue? Who did my puppy? What my group class was? I can still remember that I forgot to take treats with me into my group class and they were in my van, and that lost me points because I didn't have spare treats with me. And I tell you what, I've never forgotten treats ever since then. but it is such a big thing, because when, like, whether you're doing, like, your IMDT, your APDT, your PACT, like any of those organizations where, you know, you're being assessed on your capability and your knowledge as a trainer, it's really nerve-wracking.
And I found it very hard because you kind of don't get that. When you speak to a client, they're kind of like, okay, so this is the problem. And then you have a little bit of time to prep, don't you? But when you're doing your assessment, it's like, right, this is it, go. And you're like, well, okay. And you've really got to think on your toes, haven't you? But I mean, it adds to the adrenaline rush as well, doesn't it? And when it's over, you just get that so much big relief that you're like, oh,
the
God,
dopamine
like,
is
done.
Strong. You're like,
yeah. I'm done.
I think as well, like, because now obviously I've kind of come full circle and now I assess people. And it's really funny because I remember my puppy one, I knew the trainer assessing me. In fact, I knew all the trainers that were assessing me. But I remember, like, he kind of just dropped into, like, this whole new character of, like, this new person. And do you know what? Like, I find I do it myself, especially if I'm, like, because with the rescue one-to-one, normally there's, like, now the way we do it is someone's, like, being the client and then someone's writing down what's happening and stuff like that. So if I'm being the person that's acting the client, I go really ditzy deliberately. Like, I literally channel, like, I'm going to really offend someone now and I'm really sorry, but I'm not. I, like, channel my inner Essex girl. And like, especially if me and mom are put together, like, then we both start channeling and it's just hilarious and, like, brilliant. But it's cool because I feel it puts the person at ease more, and you're kind of, the thing is, like, you don't want people to do badly. You're trying to, like, help people and you're trying to put them at ease and kind of, like, help them, but obviously we can't give the answer, so it's from the assessor side of things, it can be just as nerve-wracking because you're not trying to catch people out. You're not trying to get them to do it wrong. You're trying to kind of just be there and support them, which I think is kind of cool.
That's, I think you need that as a dog trainer in general. Like, you go and see a new client, you need empathy, don't you? You need support, you need empathy. And I think if you haven't got that as a dog trainer, you will struggle a little bit. You need to know how the dog's feeling, what's happened in the dog's life, how they're feeling. You know, how many times have you had a client ring you that's just in tears because they think they've done something wrong with their dog, where in fact it just might be an environmental issue or something. But you know, you need to be empathetic and helpful and supportive. It's, I think if you've got the knowledge, that's great, but you also need that other side of it. You need to be able to help, support, encourage and be empathetic with them.
And I think that applies with, like, the dog and the owner or the handler, you know, the person in the house, because there are times, as you say, you know, that it can just be environmental, but there's other times where it's genetics, you know. Unfortunately, sometimes people do go out and get a breed because it looks cute.
Yeah.
They don't know what they're getting and you're like, oh. So this is where, you know, with you doing the puppy training, it's so important because if you have a hound come in or a gun dog come in or a shepherd come in, like herding breed, you can be like, right, cool. So this puppy right now is this little thing, but what we have to kind of remember is their genes are going to make them more predisposition to, if it's herdy breed, they might like moving things. They might want to bark at things. If it's a gun dog, it might want to carry stuff in its mouth. If it's a hound, it might want to sniff. And I think it's really important to kind of, even if people haven't done their full research, that as trainers, we kind of explain to them where the dog's going from, but also try and make it so that everyone can coexist together in a happy little household.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so true. And I think a lot of people will go out and just get a puppy on a whim. You know, like, people will think 3 or 4 or 5 years about maybe bringing a baby into the family, but sometimes puppies are just a bit on a whim. They're like, oh yeah, well, you know, we'll get one for Christmas, we'll get one tomorrow, we'll just go out and get one. And they're not researching the breeds properly and not, like, you know, the breed specific traits and stuff like that. They're not really looking into how this cute little puppy can develop and it's what its needs, you know, they're going to be able to meet the dog's needs as it grows and it gets older. So I think it is, yeah, it's very important.
Yeah, yeah. So what made you get a whippet? There you go, let's just throw that question. Come on then, now, why did you get a whippet? You'll be like, so my first puppy, and it's cute.
Firstly, because I like the way they look. So, you know, here's me saying people don't do their research. But I think she fits my lifestyle quite well, because sometimes she will come out in the van with me and she'll be up 2 or 3 hours. Sometimes I'll be so busy during the day, but she'll be happy with like half an hour zoomies at the park and then she'll be asleep. So we kind of like fit into each other's lifestyles. I don't have to bend over backwards for her lifestyle. She doesn't need me to change anything. And we just kind of like, I think the breeds just worked really well for what I wanted. But also one of the last ever dogs that got adopted out of the charity that I used to work for was a Whippet Cross Labrador. And I absolutely loved it. I was so close to adopting her. But luckily, one of my very close friends now has her. So it's,
so you still get to see her.
Yeah, well, I still get to see her, which is nice. But yeah, the breed, I think her breed just works really well with my commitments, basically.
Because I actually think Whippets are very cool pet dogs. Like, they sleep a lot.
Yeah, the whole sighthound thing. I think everyone has this think that they're up and running and they have to be active constantly, but they're really not. Like, she has her half hour zoomies a day. Like, we went out to the dog park this morning and she kind of hasn't moved off the couch for most of the day, to be honest. So.
I'm loving her plan, you know, quick little bit of exercise and morning and sleep.
I'm done.
Yeah. Perfectly acceptable. Perfectly acceptable.
Don't get me, like, we do train. I'll probably go in tonight and we'll do like a little bit of training with her and stuff. We're trying to master the settle before Christmas. But it's going quite well. So we'll do a little bit of training tonight.
I mean, but obviously so we're recording in the future. So this is now post Christmas. So I wonder if you'll listen to this and go, yay, we did it, or no, didn't quite get nailed. You'll be listening to the episode now going, either yay or don't.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Oh, no, yeah. It'll be, I'm sure before. She's such a poppet anyway, like, honestly. So if you didn't have a whippety in your life, what would be kind of your other choice? What do you fancy
staffy.
In the future?
A staffy. I need a little staffy in my life. Oh, I love them. I just think they're the coolest. Actually, I've just had a little staffy puppy graduate today off my puppy course. She's beautiful. Loved her.
Little
I just love the breed.
Ears and just little teeth, yeah. And smiles. And
And just going back to like Australia as well, every like probably fourth household who had a dog had a staffy. Like, they were absolutely loved over there as a breed. And then I came back to England and everyone's like, oh, bull breeds, oh, I don't know about them staffies, oh, they can lock jaws. And I was like, what is going on with you people?
Yeah, like, what's beautiful. Wrong with y'all? First of all, they don't have locking jaws. That's a lie. It's not a thing. They have strong jaws, they don't lock. There's not a magic key in their ear hole. Also, that's really interesting. But I guess, so the climate, like, they're shorter heads, so they kind of do pretty well in the sunshine. Like, they quite like it when it's warmer. I mean, my brother out in Perth's got a bull breedy mixed thing, so.
It's just the general, like, I just found this massive shift. Like, everyone over there loves bull breeds. Everyone over here was a bit like, oh. No, maybe not. It's
weird, isn't it? And I think also maybe it's like a bit of a regional thing, because there are definitely like areas where you see loads of bull breeds and then there's areas where you don't see many at all. But I just, I love my little Staffords. They are like the bestest, bestest.
They are, aren't they? I love them.
So it's nearly New Year's Eve. Which means New Year's resolutions, of course. I know. Do you have any training resolutions for next year? As in dog training. Like, I don't need to know if you're giving up coffee or any other drama.
I wouldn't say resolutions, but I want to be, by the time I've done all my CPD courses next year, I want to be definitely by like this time next year, by Christmas. I want to have more classes up and running. So more, obviously I'll be doing my man trailing, be doing my scent work classes and hoopers. So just really, really want to build on that. So I'm not going to put any definite numbers down or say I need to be here or there, but just be more geared that way.
So that's your business goal. What about your training goal?
You mean training as in
like just stuff either that you're going to be doing with Twigs, or that you're doing like you and her together? Like I know you said like doing a bit more running, but like is there anything you're thinking, oh, I'd like to try another new sport, or I really want to teach her this particular trick? Or I mean, obviously your settle should be nailed by New Year's Eve, so you can tick.
Oh, it will be. I'm going to send you a video of her sat under the Christmas tree, settled.
Please do, and then I will put it on the Instagram and be like, the settle one.
The settle one. To be fair, out of all the dogs that I hang around, Twiggy needs to do more hoopers. So me and Maria are going to hire a field once a week and take our dogs, because she's got two golden retrievers now, so we're going to take our dogs, and once a week we are going to do our own dog training and do hoopers, because I think Miko's at like level 5, or she's at level trying to do level 6 now. Mm-hmm. And Twiggy's on level 1, so I think we need to work a bit more on our hoopers, because it'd be nice to start going to competitions and stuff with her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it'd be cool if we see you at some of the comps next year. That would be very cool. Even if it's just to like pop down and be like, hey, and kind of get in the environment and stuff, that'd be cool. But okay, so my challenge to you, I'm going to give you a challenge now for the year.
Okay.
Want you to try to have got to at least your progress award level 3 by the end of next year.
Deal.
I think that's doable.
3, I reckon. Yeah.
That's doable. It's not like I've said you're right, you need to be to level 10. So you've got basically 5 weeks to do every single one, because that's a lot.
Yeah.
Like. But yeah, I reckon level 3. So when it happens, you need to send me the picture. So again, I'll put it up like on our social media and be like, she did it. She nailed it.
Actually, I think I've got a level 3 rosette somewhere here. I could just stick it on her.
No. I'm going to be checking with Maria that you have done this properly. I'm going to send Maria a message and be like, Maria, please let me know that Nat has done this properly and there is no cheating. Because you'll only be cheating yourself, Nat.
That's very true, yeah. And Twiggy, she wouldn't want to be cheated.
No, the princess can't be cheated. That's rubbish.
Princess,
so man trailing, hoopers, anything else you can think of what you've got?
Well, I might have a look into Canny Cross. Like, she seemed to really love that. But yeah, just I think that's quite a lot, I think, to do in 1 year.
Yeah. I mean, great. Going back to Greg, when we did the episode Dog Train Dictionary, and he was like, yeah, well, I'm going to read more books. Guess what? He didn't.
No.
I feel you should always give yourself goals that are obtainable.
He said about bringing Axel to Hoopers as well. He's like, I do all this stuff with all these other dogs and I never do anything with Axel. And I was like, yeah, you should come.
There you go. Get him to join in the little training group. Because the thing is, if there's 3 of you in the training group, then if one of you's ill 1 week, the other 2 will still train.
Yeah, that's a good idea, isn't it? Very good.
Then it keeps you like doing your thing, because it's right. If like, it's like just 2 of you training and one of you's not well, then the other one's like, oh, well, you know, I won't do it this week.
Yeah. You need accountability. Accountability buddies.
Exactly. We need our little accountability buddies. So I guess I should kind of think about what I've just like given you a big lecture, and then I'm like, oh, I should probably think about
what are you doing?
Here we go. So professionally, I definitely want to be teaching in person more next year. That's a big thing for next year. I'm going to be doing more in-person workshops. I'm being hosted by more people, so I want to be like around the country more, doing more stuff, which is cool. You never know, I might come up past the wall again at some point.
Yeah,
might come to the far north. But I think so that would be cool to like do more in-person stuff next year, definitely. In terms of me training, the bulk of this is on Dodge now because, you know, the girls are old and they like being on the sofas and don't need any of my shit, basically. So it's kind of down to Dodge to deal with my shit. Competition goal, I would love to get him up to grade four at UK Hoopers. We're at grade three now, so it would be, I kind of would like to get him up another grade next year. That's kind of my goal there. In terms of the progress awards and stuff, there'll definitely be more progress awards happening in the summer with him. At the moment, my ground isn't good enough. And also, the little petal managed to rip a claw off the other week. So we've had a toe injury. So we haven't been able to go training or do anything because he took a nail off, bless him.
Oh no.
So he's been having a bit of R&R. But actually, I think it's been quite good for him to have a few weeks just off. No training, no, like we're doing little road walks, just being careful. He had a play date the other day and managed to make it bleed again. So I'm just being a bit mindful of kind of what how much he's doing basically and what he's doing. We've got a couple of private fields booked over Christmas time, so he can have off-lead runnings
Yeah.
when the parks are going to be super busy. Because what is it, right? Why is it Christmas? Everyone has to walk their dog on Christmas Day.
I know. I think it's because everyone's in the house, aren't they? And the house is busy. They're like, oh, I just need to get out of the house. And obviously, the
Yeah, so
dog's the
then
first one to
the
go
dog's
with
like,
them, isn't
whoa,
it?
hang on a minute. Like, why are we going out again now? What's happening? Like, I
Yeah.
don't normally go out this much or whatever. But yeah, so obviously at that time the parks and stuff are very busy. So that is not a time to be going to local parks for us. So we will be avoiding those, going to private fields and then doing like little road walks and then probably lots of good stuff, lots of licky mats and
Yeah.
pet remedy to kind of keep everyone chilled and all of that good stuff.
It'd be interesting to see, you know, because dogs need rest. So it'd be interesting to see how Dodge is when he has this break and he has like chill out time and he has just run fun stuff in the park and he has his licky mat. If it changes his hoopers when he goes back, like if he's because he's had time to decompress a little bit and chill out, you might find when you go back, he's like raring to go.
So potentially toe dependent. We are competing 31st of January, 31st December, 1st of January. So we've got New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. It's all right. I'm not getting drunk at New Year's Eve because, you know, health and safety. I am judging as well, so I've got
Oh,
to
okay.
be a little bit sensible. Oh, that's another thing that's happening next year, and I'll tell you that in a minute. I'll post-it note that in my brain
Right.
and get back to that in a second. So his last competition was the first weekend of December. So he'll pretty much have had a month
With
off.
no training at all, and then straight into a competition.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be interesting to see how he does, hey?
I mean, maybe it'll be like he'll be absolutely amazing. And I'm like, right, I just don't have to train my dog anymore. We just go to
Yeah.
competitions and it'll be fine. That's not a thing, people. You always need to make sure that
Always
your
have
dog
to
is
train.
trained and prepped and fit and all the rest of it. I think my main concern for it is going to be whether his fitness levels are okay.
Yeah.
Although when it's Hoopers, it's like 30 seconds long at the most. So getting about, he's only kind of really doing four like 10, 15 minute sessions because obviously he gets out, he warms up, he does his run, we call him off, and then he goes back in the van. So I think that I'm a little bit like, oh, it'll be interesting to see if his times are similar, but obviously it's all going to be toe dependent, literally,
Yeah.
because we're on an outdoor sand surface. So if his nail isn't mended, I don't want to run him on sand because I don't want to risk him getting bad boo-boos and doing anything
Yeah.
disastrous with that. But the other very exciting thing that is happening on January the 2nd, I'm judging at an independent agility show.
Oh, wow.
But for the listeners, Nat's face, like Nat's eyebrows just left her forehead and like her mouth just dropped open and went, and then what?
What?
So, first of all, thank you, Becky, who was podcast guest literally a couple of episodes ago, because we were talking about judging and such things. Yeah, it's official. I'm going to judge a steeplechase. So it's only jumps and tunnels. So it's kind of like hoopers, but with jumps.
Yeah.
Although I have to say, I kind of approached it from a hoopers angle. And thanks to also Emily Osborne, who's a Hoopers World instructor and agility person, Emily and Becky both kind of had a little look at my courses and approved them. But also massive thank you to Sam at Kaluki for giving me the opportunity, because I'm quite excited to judge it, actually. I think it's going to be quite cool to judge a different sport and kind of see how it goes, really. I don't think it's going to convert me in any way, shape, or form. And obviously, I don't have a dog at the moment that can do agility. But who knows what the future holds?
Expanding your training knowledge.
Exactly. And also, because Hoopers kind of does have an agility basis in the start, it's kind of cool for me to be able to have a little go at kind of seeing how an agility course runs and just how the lines differ and stuff. Because obviously in Hoopers, yes, we're mindful of lines and approaches, but when you add jumps, you have to think about where the dog's taking off and where they're landing and all that kind of thing. And like, it made my brain hurt. I'm not going to lie. It was hard.
Yeah. The first time I did Hoopers, it made my brain hurt as well.
No, Hoopers is easy.
It's a lot to remember. There is a lot to remember.
So that's the exclusive ready for next year, is that I'm going to be doing a thing. So yay.
Exciting. Good.
Right, now I'm going to say goodbye now. I know normally the episodes are a bit longer, but I'm kind of aware that it's the week between Christmas and New Year and people might not have hours to listen to my dulcet tone as normal. So we are going to say bye there. But thank you so, so much for joining me. Thank you for all the cool tales of all the different dog jobs you've had and all the different places you've worked and the transition from kind of working in kennels and cattle stations to now being a dog trainer is... it's a cool journey, and I love finding out how different people have done stuff. Hopefully you will have had a very lovely Christmas when this comes out, and I'd like to wish you a very, very happy new year.
Oh, you too, and thank you so much for inviting me. It's been really good fun.
Cool, thank you. So guys, as always, if you want to follow us on the social medias, we have TikTok now down with the kids. There is a TikTok, there is Instagram. Oh, Nat, where can people find you?
Oh, Instagram and Facebook. If you just search Tees Valley Dog Training, I am there.
There we go. See, I nearly forgot to tell people where to find you before they were learning where to tell. Everyone knows where to find me. It's fine. So yeah, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, at Canine Hoopers World, at Dodge Shepherd gets you all the fun Dodge stuff on Insta. And until next time, guys, have a very happy new year. If you have dogs, I hope that the fireworks do not go on too long and they are not too stressed. And stay safe, be kind, wash your hands thoroughly, keep your dogs on lead around livestock, and don't let them lick toads. Happy New Year! Hey guys, we're going to be taking a little break from the podcast. When I say we, I mean me, I, us as a household. Unfortunately, this is not good news, and this is not the best start to the new year. Within a 24-hour period, we had both Chica and Munch admitted into the vets. Unfortunately, both of them had diagnosis of cancer. Princess Chica is still with us. She's now on borrowed time, but she's doing well. She's comfortable, she's happy, and she's doing okay. Unfortunately, Munchkin's diagnosis was not as good, and we made the decision to say goodbye to her before New Year's Eve happened, because as you've heard in previous episodes, she found New Year's Eve very difficult, and she was on very, very limited time, and we didn't want her to have to go through a night of being scared and worried by stupid fireworks. So she's crossed the Rainbow Bridge. She's no longer with us, and obviously our hearts are broken. I'm sorry this isn't great news, guys, and I appreciate all the messages, all the support and everything else. And please just give your dogs an extra big hug today and make sure that if something doesn't seem right with them, please take them to the vets and get them checked out, because although the diagnosis wouldn't have been any different from her, at least we caught it when we did, and we could make informed decisions, and she wasn't in any pain. So, sorry, this is not a Happy New Year message, but I will be back. There will be more episodes. They're going to be amazing. But for now, we're going to cherish Chica, keep Dodge and Minx in full trouble mode, and we will see you for season 4 very, very soon. Site www.caninehooperswild.com. Canine Hoopers World now has achievement awards online, so anyone, anywhere can test their teamwork and get one of our beautiful rosettes. There's even one for puppies. The website will tell you more about that and Hoopers, how to find an instructor. We also offer online training. There are beginners courses, we offer online training in distance handling, and there are instructor courses for dog trainers. Join us on Facebook, we have a friendly international group, and follow us on Instagram at Canine Hoopers World. Canine Hoopers World, everyone's invited.